Welcome to The Wolf Whistle, the podcast that interviews and celebrates the former players of our great club, Wolverhampton Wanderers. Welcome to The Wolf Whistle.
Welcome to the 30th edition of the Wolf Whistle podcast, the podcast that interviews and celebrates the former players of our great club. But not only players, we also celebrate great managers as well. And there's no greater manager, especially for me and my time in supporting Wolves, as Graham Turner. Graham, good morning.
Good morning, Jason.
How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Despite the lockdown, we're surviving and we live right out in the country, deepest and darkest Herefordshire, and it's still beautiful here.
Brilliant. So now when I called yesterday, I think you was out on your afternoon walk.
Yeah, we've got a very nice walk down by the river, so I got my hours exercise in.
Brilliant. Good man, good man. Now, obviously on the subject of exercise, Graham, obviously your football career, 4 years at Wrexham, 5 years at Chester and then 10 years at Shrewsbury, 650 games in total, I believe, probably more than that with cup games. You then sort of moved into management. Now, the question really, the starting question is, as a footballer, did you ever consider a career in management, or was it quite unexpected?
Well, I think as I was getting on, you start to think about what your second career might be, and I was aiming towards being a school teacher. But I also took my coaching qualifications and obviously kept that in mind that maybe something would crop up, but it wasn't a big priority for me to stay in the game. And then fortunately, Richie Barker, who became assistant manager at Wolves, took over at Shrewsbury when I was there and asked me if I fancied being player coach. So I took on that role. It was only for a few months and Richie left, and that's how I got into management. I took over as caretaker at Shrewsbury and things went quite well.
And, I mean, how difficult is it, Graham, being a player coach, you know, obviously playing with your teammates and then having to give them a bit of a rollicking when things are going wrong?
I think that was a great difficulty, where I was player coach and really I didn't say an awful lot in the dressing room at half time. That was left to the manager, to Richie Barker. But when I took over as player manager, that was where the difficulty started, you know. And I said to the players, I reserve the right to criticise each of you, knowing that I might be having a bad game, knowing that I might have made mistakes. Forget about what I've done. I'm going to have a go at you to put things right at half-time. And it was duly accepted. We had a good squad of players there. I'd been one of the lads. I'd stepped up to player coach, ultimately player manager, and they accepted that I'd been a very good pro. I'd worked hard at the game, and it was a fairly comfortable transition in the end.
Brilliant. And talking about transition, you then went from Shrewsbury to Aston Villa, which was obviously quite a step up in terms of, you know, the size of the club. Villa's a huge club. And how did that come about, Graham, and what was the transition like?
Well, we had probably 6 years of success at Shrewsbury in the what is now the Championship. You know, we were on the fringe of the playoffs to the top flight. And for a club the size of Shrewsbury, that was a magnificent achievement. We'd also sold players. We kept the club solvent. So all in all, it was being well run. I had one or two clubs inquire about my services. Bigger clubs, and then the opportunity came along to join Aston Villa. It was a bit of a saga through the close season. Doug Ellis phoned and advised me they'd got a young goalkeeper that they wanted to put out on loan, and while he was on, I said, well, any point in me applying for the job? We're counting this telephone conversation as an application. Could you be at my house tomorrow? And that's how swiftly it came about. But it wasn't easy negotiations, and Doug had a reputation that I was a bit wary of, and I turned down the job at first. Went on holiday. He contacted me while we were away and met up with him when I got back and duly signed. If I look back and be perfectly honest with myself, Villa had been European champions 2 years earlier. To have gone from a club the size of Shrewsbury to the size of one of the world's biggest in Aston Villa at that stage, I think the jump was too great.
Yeah.
And that's being critical of myself. I think that maybe something in between might have stood me in better stead. But the one thing I tried to do at Villa, the big transition, obviously, was the players, the quality of players there, and but also the size of the egos for some. And what I tried to do was, with my signings, buy players for the future. You know, when I left there, I felt that I left some very good young players, people like Tony Daly, Mark Walters, Tony DiRigo. We pinched Martin Keown from Arsenal,
yeah.
Paul Elliott. A group of young players that went on to have good careers in football. But there's no patience at that level, and I didn't have time to see it through. It's just over 2 years at Villa. Great experience. Wouldn't have done without it, but it could have gone better for me.
Brilliant. Well, look, Graham, that was obviously a very honest summary of your time at Villa, especially under Deadly Doug, because we all know he was pretty trigger happy. But then, obviously, the big move, especially for Wolves fans, in October 1986, you took over as Wolves manager from Brian Little. Now, look, I want to give you some statistics first, Graham. In 83-84, we got relegated, finishing bottom of the league. 84-85, we got relegated again, finishing bottom of the league. 85-86, we had our third relegation on the bounce. We did better that season, though, Graham. We finished bottom but one. You took over the following season, 86-87, in the October. So we're literally 2 months into the season. They've had three relegations on the bounce. What was, first of all, how did you hear about the Wolves job? And what was that club like to walk into?
Well, I think it was, you'd gone from Villa that had all the amenities, great training ground, all the facilities you could, big gates, all the things you could wish for as a manager. I'd just left them probably 2 or 3 weeks prior to, it was Jack Harris and Dick Omden who were then on the board at Wolves, came round to my house to see me and asked if I'd be interested in taking the job. You do your homework on a club, but you didn't need to do it on Wolves. Their fall was so dramatic. It wasn't only what you've described, the relegations, but the club was in a terrible state. Two sides of the ground were closed. There was no training facilities, nothing there at all. And it was desperate. The concern for me was I thought Brian Little was in the job, and they reassured me or told me that Brian was just a caretaker manager and they'd been looking for somebody with a little bit more experience. So the only reason I took the job was I was a Wolves supporter as a kid.
Oh, great.
And you don't get very often the chance to manage the club that you supported. I was a supporter in the time of Billy Wright and Bert Williams and Ron Flowers. Just an aside, it was great meeting those sort of people. As I got to know the club and got to know them, and the former Players Association was formed. But that's digressing. I looked at the club. My head said, don't touch it with a barge pole. My heart, hang on, you're a Wolves supporter. Come on, what an opportunity. So I did, walked through the door, and it was even worse than I expected. training balls, training facilities, all the sort of things that you're looking for. Weren't there. First thing I had to do, I'd got contacts at, say, Mitre, who produced Football League balls. You know, I need some training balls. Can you send me some? And they sent a couple of dozen, all colours, but all of the top quality. So things like that we had to go through. Training facilities were awful. But it was difficult. I wasn't universally popular when I walked through the door there, but we had to overcome that. Results didn't go terribly well. It culminated in an FA Cup defeat against Chorley after playing them three times.
Yeah.
First game, first replay, second replay, and we lost up at Bolton in the second replay. And I think that was the catalyst. That focused everybody's mind on just how low the club had sunk. And it was up to me to try and put it right. And there was a big challenge there, and I felt that I could rise to the challenge.
Now, Graham, obviously, it did, you know, you talk about Chorley, obviously, that's the second month you've been there. we lose 3-0. That 86-87 season, bearing in mind we just had 3 relegations on the bounce, you did take us into the playoffs. I mean, how disappointing, do you think it was a bit too early at that point, and how disappointing was it to lose in the playoffs?
Well, you got to, I kept trying to persuade, it was a difficult situation in as much as the club was owned by the Gallagher's builders, developers. They had a board in Jack Harris and Dick Omden. And it was difficult to know who to go through. The board had to go to the Gallaghers to see whether they could spend any money. So I took the steps of going right over to see Tony Gallagher at his house and finding out whether I could spend some money. We needed strengthening. The only way we could do that was to go out and buy some players. His words were, keep your powder dry. We haven't got that sort of money yet.
Oh.
Several weeks later, phone call, look, you've got a little bit of money to spend, go and spend it wisely. So I went out and bought 2 kids from West Brom, and I don't think anybody was impressed with that at all. But the rest, as far as those 2 players are concerned, is history. But that was the start of putting together a side that I think we won 11 out of 12 games on a run that took us from bottom half of the league to the playoffs. We missed out in the playoffs to Aldershot, but in the end it wasn't a bad thing. When you look back on it, disappointing as it was to stomach, it was a blessing in disguise in as much as we could get things better organised and we were that much stronger the following season.
Now, Graham, the 2 players you're clearly referring to, which you didn't spend a great deal of money on at all, were obviously Steve Bull and Andy Thompson, who we signed in the November 86. He'd only been there a matter of weeks. You know, that raid on West Brom continued with Robbie Dennison in the March, the 87. I mean, look, we all know how pivotal they were, but could you see the potential early doors? And another question, how important was Ron Jukes in all of this? Because I know he was a good ally to you in terms of his scouting, the scouting he was doing for the club.
Yeah, he was a very important part of the backroom staff. He would go and have a look at players initially and come to me with a list that we should be trying to sign. And obviously the 2 West Brom players, Steve and Andy, were top of his list. I went to see them play against, I think it was Chelsea, in what was then a full members' cup. And they had a big centre-half called Mickey Droy. He's one that you would describe, he didn't take any prisoners. And there was this skinny kid up front, Bully, who knocked him about to get goal-scoring chances. And he must have had 5 chances, stuck 4 over the bar and scored with the 5th. And he just impressed me with that determination to get into goal-scoring positions. His touch was poor, his pace was good, his desire was incredible, and so he was top of our list. Andy Thompson just looked a good player. He played fullback. He generally, his control, his vision, his passing was very good, and he could defend as well. So there were 2 players that, hang on, shouldn't we be going for more experienced players, the position we're in? No, let's build for the future. Let's look longer term and make sure we get a side that will continue to make progress. Not easy negotiating with West Brom. It was Ron Saunders at the time. He didn't really want to sell them. But in the end, he cracked. I'd phoned him that many times, he got fed up a bit, so we agreed a fee. And I can remember phoning the then chairman, Sid Lucas, and saying, we've agreed a fee, I'm coming over with the transfer forms, would you sign them, please? He was devastated, didn't want to see his young players leave West Brom, but it was the manager's decision. So I went over with the forms to the Hawthorns, and he duly signed the transfer forms. I saw both players the following morning at Molyneux. I tried to meet them away from the place because I didn't want them seeing Molyneux and the state it was in at that stage, but they came over. And it took, I think, Bully 2.5 minutes and maybe Tomo 2 minutes to make the minds up to sign for us. And both said the same thing. We're impressed with the fact that you want us. If you want us that badly, we want to come to you. And then there was Chorley. I think that a couple of weeks into their career at Wolves, they came up with us to Bolton to watch the game. And I think if they both could have reversed their decision, they would have gone back to West Brom. But as we know, things worked out all right in the end. But it was a bit of a difficult start for them.
I mean, the timing was great there, Graham, because like you said, a couple of weeks later, if they'd have still been at West Brom and saw the Chorley result, there's no way they'd have come and history's then rewritten. But then in the March 87, you know, another 4 or 5 months later, West Brom must have been sick of you, because then you went back in for Robbie Dennison.
Yep, this is where Ron Dukes played a part in that. You know, he'd watched, and it was convenient for him, he lived in Walsall, but he'd watched West Brom Reserve quite a number of times. Robbie had seen, and I fancied him as well. So, again, we agreed a fee. I think Bully and Tomo hadn't really pulled up any trees at that stage, so I don't think they were too wary of us coming and raiding their young players from them. So it was... still an opportunity to get them. Modest fee for Robbie, and again another one who contributed greatly to the progress that the club made and its rise up the divisions.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, could you envisage these three players to make such an impact as they did?
No, we couldn't have done, and we couldn't have envisaged the 2 seasons that we had in the lower divisions, getting out there, the Wembley final. I mean, it was like a dream come true, the progress that we made. And it wasn't only those three. We added other players to it, characters. And don't forget, we had another important ex-West Brom player, Ali Robertson.
Yeah.
Ali was the leader in the dressing room and played a massive part in the club's revival. I think he enjoyed himself. I think he, you know, despite the fact that he played a lot of games at the top level, I think being skipper of a side... Oh, and I don't think he won very much, so...
he didn't?
So, yeah, I think he had a great time and a great influence. And there was another one called Floyd Street.
Yes.
Terrific pace, built like the side of a house. And those two played a big part in our revival as well.
Oh, huge, huge. I mean, you know, we mentioned Steve Bolandy, Thompson, Robbie Dennison. All three of them went on to have testimonials at the club. Ali Robertson, he'd played 600-700 games for West Brom. You know, he crossed the divide. But, you know, he was already at the club, obviously, when you come, Graham. But he was such a, you know, a strong player to have at the back, wasn't he? And marshal the defence as we, you know, climb the divisions.
Yeah, he had an important influence on the players around him. Used to take them out on a Tuesday after training for a drink.
I've heard.
There was a different culture then than there is today. The players, it was part of the spirit. We used to work tremendously hard on a Tuesday morning, as we did most days in training. But Tuesday was particularly a tough one. And then they'd go up in town and have a couple of beers together. And I didn't mind that. I knew where they were. I knew what was going on. But it was part of building that spirit, building that togetherness that you need in the dressing room. And things were so bad in terms of the facilities we'd got. It just helped that spirit was being progressed in within the dressing room.
Yeah.
It was further. We'd got things like we'd got nowhere to train at all on a Friday. We'd had a little bit of snow. And the only place was the car park. There was the odd car parked where we wanted to play. So we got a group of players, 12, 14 players around a car, and we actually bounced them off the area so that we could have a little game.
Brilliant.
We won the following day. I think we scored about 5 the following Saturday. And so every Friday then it became a tradition. We went on the car park. We had to set people up to make sure cars didn't park there. It was at the back of where now they've got the supermarket. And we used to train on there. That's the sort of facilities we had. But it also created that spirit amongst the lads that we'd have a laugh and a joke, but we'd also work hard and the lads would play hard. And things went like a dream.
And how important was the backroom team at the time, Graham? Because there was Barry Powell, who was obviously a former 1974 League Cup winner for Wolves, and Gary Pendry. And, you know, I can remember, you know, all sitting in the dugout, you know, in those days on the Tuesday night matches and 2 stands open and, you know, the floodlights on that green baize. It was beautiful to watch. But how important were the backroom team?
They were vital. We'd got Paul Darby's physio, did an excellent job, and then Gary and Barry Powell, terrific characters. Particularly Gary had that ability to make people smile, make people in the dressing room laugh. He'd always come in with a joke. He'd got a terrific manner with the players. And I felt you needed that from a coach, that he's the go-between the players and the manager.
Yep.
So things they would say and talk to him about, they wouldn't come to talk to me about it because of my position. And so you needed that in-between sort of person, and he was perfect for that for that job. But I never used to, or very rarely, sat in the dugout. I wanted a bird's-eye position when watching the games.
Yeah.
So I can remember having to climb up into the stand, then go up a ladder to a rickety old television stand and watch the games from up there, connected to the dugout with a walkie-talkie.
Brilliant.
So it was... You couldn't have got any more comic than those sort of things, but yeah. It worked for me.
Oh, it definitely worked. I mean, those two seasons, Graham, 87, 88, 88, 89, bearing in mind, three back-to-back relegations, then we finished fourth in your first season, and then, you know, two brilliant championship wins on the bounce. I mean, those two seasons, the goals of Steve Bull and Andy Mutchin, and obviously culminating after the first season with that trip to Wembley. We'll start off with, you know, the trip to Wembley first. I mean, 80,000 supporters there, 50,000 Wolves. What was that day like?
I'm glad you brought that up, because that's a terrific memory. One of my greatest memories in football goes back to me being a supporter as well. And to get to Wembley, two fourth division sides, to get 80,000 to watch a game is incredible to start with. And then having got promoted, we're okay. This was the icing on the cake, and it was a terrific occasion. I can remember we got a break between our final league match and the final. So we took the players out to Mallorca just to change the scene, just to get some training done out there. And when we came back, we were absolutely flying. In my mind, there was not a shadow of a doubt we would win the game, because when you watch, you can tell sometimes in training when the mood is right, when the players are right. And I could sense that. I could see that going to Wembley, it was just going to be the icing on the cake, and that there's no way we could lose the game. Perhaps a little bit more. It was closer than that in the end, a little bit more dramatic. But what an occasion, and the lap of honour around Wembley, and the culmination of the bus tour through the city.
Yeah,
it's absolutely incredible. I think there was, if memory serves me right, 250,000 people
amazing.
In the centre, and to have achieved that, to have gone through the city with that sort of number out there to support the team, to congratulate the team on the success, was unbelievable. And the open top bus tour just was the culmination of a terrific time.
I mean, you say about that, Graham, there was, you know, 250,000 people in the city. That the club was a sleeping giant. When you took over, the crowds were between 3,000 and 5,000. You know, by sort of 88, 89, the crowds were for the Sheffield United game, for example, and some of the games where he was nearing promotion, it was like sort of, you know, 20,000 odd people. So the crowds had almost quadrupled. Going into the third division, obviously, the Sherpa van was a good barometer, really, because that was a competition between the bottom two divisions, which we won. But once again, did you go into the third division thinking, you know, we can win this?
I think the confidence was there that right, it was such a big club in the lower leagues. You felt confident that you could continue with that success. The mood around the place was buoyant. And you just wanted to get out there and get the job done again. And the crowd then started to play their part. It was difficult when the gates were so low and the crowd was so far away from the pitch as well, particularly in what was in the John Ireland stand. I mean, it was a mile away from the touchline. And so the atmosphere got better. Although there were still only two sides of the ground open, it became the sleeping giant again.
Yeah.
But the sleeping giant was beginning to stir, and you just felt confident that we could keep it going. Obviously, the quality at what was then the third division was that much better. Sheffield United were a good side. Port Vale, Johnny Rudge had a good side at Port Vale. And we knew it was going to be more difficult, but we were confident that we could continue with the success.
Yeah, now that season, Graham, culminated in Steve Ball getting England honours while a third division player scoring on his debut versus Scotland. Now, I mean, I've got to ask this. Did you feel that you was part of that? Because obviously you plucked him from West Brom, and his goal record, as we know, 102 goals in two seasons. And the other fact is Andy Mutch was scoring mid-20s, and in any other club he'd be top scorer. And you know, he was second top scorer. So when Steve Ball made his England debut, did you feel part of that, Graham? Because you should have done.
There was a lot of pride with that. But he was a great lad to work with. He never had an edge about him. He was always that down-to-earth, hard-working player. And when I first took over, I watched the first game. I think it was Rochdale in the worst game I've seen, I think. It was a goalless draw at Molineux. And we would try and play from the back and string 10 passes, 12 passes together in our own half, and eventually lose the ball, and they would have a strike at goal. So I looked at the players we'd got available, particularly Mutchie and Bully, who both had terrific pace, mobility, and wanted to score. And we sort of adjusted the style of play to get the ball just over the top and down the sides of them, not just ballooning it forward, but to play with a little bit of touch and feel on the ball and to drop it in the way they wanted to go. So we devised the way we played to suit the front two more than anything else, and then the rest would back things up.
Yeah.
And so it worked brilliantly for Bull and Mutch. They both played for, I think it was England, was it under-23s or under-21s?
Yeah, under-21s and the B-side as well. Side.
So it was a terrific accolade for Mutchie as well.
Oh, huge.
And he's a great foil for Bully. Very often he would supply the chance that Bully would score. Mutchie was brilliant at going down the sides, going what we term the channels, and getting crosses in or pulling balls back for Bully. And it was such a good partnership. And the fact that they both wore an England shirt together in an under-23 side was a terrific achievement and great deal of pride for all of us connected to the club. But when Bully was called up to the full England squad, it wasn't without its drama. We played at Leicester. I'd spoken to Bobby Robson, who was then the England manager, and he asked me, what's this lad Bull like? So I talked to Bobby Robson about Bully. Right, I'm going to come and watch him play. Where's your next fixture? I said, we're at Leicester. I think it was a Tuesday night. So, right, I'll be there. I'll come and watch him. And I think after about half an hour, Bully headbutted Steve Walsh on the back of the head and was duly sent off. So, thinking, that's his international career down the pan. Bobby will not be interested after that. But we had a conversation. I spoke to him again, and he did watch him again and duly picked him for the squad to play up in Scotland. And as we all know, he scored.
Brilliant. And when he scored that many goals in two seasons, and also Andy Mutch as well, there must have been then a lot of transfer speculation, which becomes unsettling because your two prize assets are obviously hot property, aren't they?
Yes, I think that it would be fair to say that I only had the one incident with Bully. He'd been tapped by a Premiership club, now a Premiership club, and he came in to see me. I said, well, look, give me till Christmas. If we're not in the fight for promotion again, then we'll talk about it. But you're not going anywhere at the moment. And he was as good as gold. Not bothered about it at all. Yeah, that'll do for me, was his words. And we left it at that, and we never spoke of it again. So he became a Wolves man through and through.
Yeah.
And the loyalty to the club, there was never any animosity. There was never any, you know, I can do better than this club. I want to play at the top flight. And there would have been no shortage of clubs that would have wanted to take him in the top flight, but he was almost unique in his attitude to his club.
Oh, look, he demonstrated a loyalty that we'll probably never see again in football. Now, Graham, back to my statistics. You never flirted with relegation while at Wolves. So the next season, obviously, we got promoted to what's now the Championship. 89-90, finished 10th. 90-91, 12th. That was the lowest you ever finished as Wolves manager, which is incredible. 91-92, 11th. 92-93, 11th. And then 93-94, 8th. Just going to a point, really, what was your relationship with Sir Jack like, Graham?
We didn't see an awful lot of Sir Jack. Maybe it would have been easier for us as a club if he'd have been living in the locality. But living in the Bahamas, I didn't have too much to do with him at that stage. It was more working with Jonathan Hayward. And, you know, we built up a relationship with Jonathan. It took a little while to get the sort of investment I needed to get promotion to the top flight.
Yeah.
And so the ground was being developed. There was a lot of investment in that. And I don't think Sir Jack wanted to spend too much on players and do the ground as well. So obviously the priority was to get the ground done.
Yes.
And it was a credit to him. You look at it now, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
So it was, I had the odd transfer fee that I could go and spend, but it was my final season that I had the real big money. And I went out and signed five players, Jeff Thomas, David Kelly, Kevin Keane, Peter Shurtliff, and Cyril Regis on a free transfer.
Yeah.
And the squad of players that I'd assembled then, I felt was good enough to go and get promotion.
100%.
Unfortunately, if you wanted to sabotage the team then, the two players that you would have taken out of it would have been Jeff Thomas and Steve Bull.
Yeah.
I think Jeff scored a magnificent goal in a 1-0 win up at Sunderland.
Yeah.
And just before the end of the game, their substitute went right through him.
Yeah.
Nearly took his leg off. And Jeff never played for me again.
Wow.
Bully got injured, I think it was at Port Vale. So he was out the side. So there was a big chunk out of the side at that stage.
Huge.
But we were still up there. We were still competing. But I think that the hierarchy were growing impatient. They wanted Premiership football,
yeah,
or the FA Cup. So Jack was particularly keen on the FA Cup. And it wasn't a bad season. We'd got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. We went to Chelsea on a Sunday afternoon for a televised game. We lost 1-0 to Chelsea. They were in the Premiership at the time, so we were out the FA Cup, and we were playing Portsmouth 2 days later, which was, you wouldn't do that now. You wouldn't play Sunday, sort of late afternoon, and then be playing again on Tuesday. But the players were devastated. You try and lift them up, but we'd got a problem. We got knocked out the FA Cup. It was a close game. We might have got a draw out of it. But Portsmouth 2 days later was such an anticlimax. We lost the game. Jonathan Hayward came into the dressing room after it. I knew the players were absolutely devastated by the results. And he started berating the players, having a go at them. And I stood back. I knew that it was the end. I said to him on the coach home, coming home, "I want to see you tomorrow." So we met about 8:30 in the morning, and I duly resigned. I could not have a director coming into, or the chairman coming into the dressing room and berating the players, especially given the circumstances of their disappointment of losing two massive big games in such a quick period of time. So that was the end for me at the club. I duly departed, and that was it.
Now, Graham, just going back to a point there, there was three great signings that season. As a Wolves fan, I was really excited, you know, and Jeff Thomas, David Kelly and Kevin Keane. Do you think at that point that, yes, we needed the investment in the team to obviously get us to the Holy Grail, but do you think that money actually put extra pressure on?
It probably did. Yes, the expectation was there that, you know, with that investment into the side, you've got to go and do it. And as I say, I think given anything like average luck, we'd have been right in contention. But the injuries, I think, to the two two key players for me. Maybe that's an excuse that I fall back on to look at my personal career and think, well, if only. These things happen. Players do get injured. You have to put up with it. And that was the end of it.
Yeah, and for you, Graham, obviously, like I said, I've spoke about all the stats. You was an incredible manager for Wolves. How much did it hurt in the end to have to walk away from the club?
I've been under pressure for a little while. You know, I think supporters had also become impatient. So the job was not without its difficulties at that stage. Everything had gone perfectly well in the first few seasons. Now it was becoming difficult. And it was heartbreaking to walk away from the club, yeah, having not achieved what I set out to do, and that was to take the club to the top flight. That was the heartbreak for me, the fact that I hadn't achieved what I wanted to achieve, what I set out to achieve. And given I was born in a place called Elsmereport, my family was in the same street as Stan Cullis' family.
Wow.
So there was links there. Joe Mercer was the old Aston Villa manager, was there. There was these people I met round the circuit. And, you know, you wanted to be remembered as a top manager. You wanted to be remembered as the man who took Wolves back up and won things again. But it didn't work out. But I can look back now and think, it's a great career. I wouldn't have missed it for the world, and I wouldn't have missed the time at Wolves.
Oh, look, Graham, being a Wolves fan growing up in that era, it was almost fearless. You know, in the 87, 88, and the 88, 89 season, you did bring back such a lot of pride to the city. Well, it was a town then. You did allude then to a point that the supporters started getting on your back. Now, yes, there was a very small, and it was a small section of the crowd, Turner must go. How once again hurtful was that after we'd had all that success and then the money comes in, puts that pressure on, we're desperate to get to the Premier League. How you know, hurtful is it to hear that from supporters who effectively revered you?
It was painful. I've got to be honest. It was difficult to accept given all the circumstances. But, you know, when you look back on it, you can understand the impatience. It was a big club, the first to play under floodlights against European opposition, that produced some absolute top players in the likes of Billy Wright and so on. And so that impatience that was there in football, it's got even worse now. It's terrible with social media.
Huh.
So it hurt, there's no doubt about that. But I can look back on it and understand that impatience, because I was impatient. I wanted to manage in the top flight again. I wanted to take Wolves there. And so, you know, I've got the same feeling, but that's the only regret, that I didn't take the club to the top flight. But for many supporters, who the younger ones will never remember these days, will never remember the state the club had fallen into.
Exactly that, Graham.
So, you know, all they remember is looking at the ground now, maybe the passage into the top flight, the success that the club is having now, the quality of the football being played, the quality of the players, that's what they'll remember.
Yeah.
But for the older supporters, I hope that I'm looked on still affectionately and played a part in the revival of the club.
Graham, trust me, you was the, you know, you, in that revival, Graham, you played the biggest part, and you did, you played the biggest role, and I'll say that on behalf of everyone, because you did, and growing up in, like I said, in that era, it was just fantastic, and what you did for the club was huge. A point I wanted to come to was you know, you've just talked about the social media now, and it's true, the expectation level at Wolves now is huge. They don't remember the puddles in the dressing room, training in the car park, two stands open. They don't remember that the team used to train in old first team kit from years gone by. You know, they clearly don't remember these times. So for you, how huge was it to see that the transformation of the ground, it got completed in December 93 when you're still manager. You know, the club had literally within 5 years completely changed top to bottom.
Yeah, I can remember the opening of the ground. We played Honved, one of the sides that the club in its heyday in the 50s used to play, and Puskas and Billy Wright were both there again together. And it was a great occasion when the ground was officially opened. And what was the question?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, how huge was it? Because obviously, you know, the transformation in those 5 years, I mean, it had just gone from literally, you know, the club was at the depths to this beautiful, you know, 28,000 seater stadium.
Yeah, that night against Honford was a terrific occasion, in as much as the club could look forward again to a top quality future.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to have the ground and you've got to have decent facilities. You don't attract players, the better players, if the facilities aren't right, whether it's the training ground, whether it's the main ground, you've got to have those facilities in place. And in the end, and mostly thanks to Sir Jack, who put a tremendous amount of money into the club to get to the state that the club is in now. And I think that people have rightly recognised the part Sir Jack played in the investment in the infrastructure of the club and making it fit for top flight football in this day and age, where supporters are comfortable, safe, and they've got all that modern new, plus the fact now that they've got a team that everybody's proud of. I mean, I think they're a terrific side to watch. Ugh. I was a bit concerned when there was such a big foreign influx coming into the club, but it's worked out better than anybody could have expected, and they are a terrific side to watch.
Oh, unbelievable. And couple of moments for you, Graham, which, you know, you must have been very proud. You obviously gave Mark Turney, your son, his debut for Wolves. Now, I remember watching Mark in the Central League, and I remember, you know, he was a quality player. You know, his distribution was fantastic. And another proud moment for you, you got freedom of the city of Hereford in 2010.
Yeah, there was several things. Yeah, Mark had a short spell at Wolves. And it was last match of the season. I think we'd got a couple of young players, Mark being one of them, that we threw into a game at Derby. The season was over. We couldn't do anything, so he made his debut there. But it was a proud day as a father to have seen him perform there. Yeah.
Brilliant.
So, yes, there was a lot of pride in that.
And Freedom of the City in Hereford 2010?
Well, I think there's several accolades that I got. That is a terrific thing for me. I mean, I put a lot of time and effort into the football club here.
Yes.
In Hereford to maintain or get back into the league and keep the club going. So for that, I got Freedom of the City, which is a terrific honour. I'm absolutely full of pride about that. And then the other ones, I think I'm in the Wolves Hall of Fame.
Wow. Yes, you are. Wow.
A terrific source of pride. I'm in the LMA Hall of Fame 1,000 club. I had over 1,000 games as manager.
Wow.
I'm in Shrewsbury's Hall of Fame. So those things, a lot of pride when I look back on things. And I've kept a good relationship with quite a number of players, including Bully. Whenever I go back to Molyneux, you know, it's always a great welcome from him and Kirsty. So, you know, it's just been a great time.
Oh, and great. You know, just looking quickly through your managerial career, you know, Hereford, you was there from 95 to 2009. So the Wolves spell was relatively short in comparison to that. And then obviously another 4 years back at Shrewsbury. But if from your time at Wolves, if you could look back now with immense pride on one abiding memory, what would it be, Graham?
Wembley, when we played in the Sherpa Van Trophy, two fourth division sides, 80,000 there, the culmination of a terrific season, the start of the club's revival, the supporters happy again, a terrific turnout of Wolves supporters, as you said, 50,000 there.
Huge.
That would have been the one moment that I enjoyed most and have got the greatest pride in.
Well, Graham, a fantastic interview, thoroughly, thoroughly honest, exactly what I expected. Graham, on behalf of obviously the Wolf Whistle podcast and the Wolf supporters that are listening, thank you for playing your part in the revival of our club, into giving us that pride back, into waking up the sleeping giant. It really does mean a lot to us.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate those words.
Thanks, Graham.
Thank you.